welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode 260 of the podcast. And it is the 13th of March, 2016, as I record this on a gorgeous spring day in Bath. And I think finally spring is actually here and it's getting warmer. And I'm really pleased because, as I've mentioned before, I'm in training for this 100 kilometer walk in July, and finally I can start doing longer walks because I'm not absolutely freezing. So looking forward to that. Anyway, today I have an interview with Beth Below about her book, The Introvert Entrepreneur, which will be interesting if you are an introvert or if you know any, or if you're not sure, then hopefully this will help you. Certainly for me, it really helped me understand why I get so tired at social events. Once I actually embraced my introversion, I was able to manage my energy a lot better. So for me, it was kind of a life-changing thing to discover that about myself. And as we all know thyself is a very important part of growing your entrepreneurial self, growing your author business and writing books. So that's very cool. In publishing news this week, probably the most depressing thing is Nook closing their UK store and also pulling back on devices, apps and other things. Of course, nobody wants Nook to fail. I certainly don't. But, you know, it doesn't look very positive for Nook readers. In the UK, they handed off their customers to Sainsbury's, which is actually a supermarket. It's kind of very, very weird. It is not a place that's associated with books. They do have, you know, a couple of paperbacks and, you know, they'll do the Dan Brown hardback or whatever. But generally, Sainsbury's, to English people, is a place you go for groceries. So really weird that they handed off their UK customer base to Sainsbury's. And of course, you know, they also closed down a whole load of other global stores a year or so ago. So I'm not sure what that says about what's going to happen in the US, but my Nook income has never been fantastic, but it has definitely slowed to a trickle in the last few months. And as ever, I'm focusing on building my audience at iBooks and Kobo and in global markets, as well as obviously on Amazon. So don't worry if you're someone who has had good Nook income. What that does mean is that you will need to be building your audience elsewhere. Meanwhile, on Amazon, they have set up a new physical bookstore in San Diego, and that shows potentially that the original one is doing quite well. So, yep, physical bookstores, I think it's a good idea. I mean, personally, I think if you have a digital store, then having a physical store seems good, because then even people who go and browse bookstores with their devices, as I do. In fact, I was in one yesterday, one of the best bookstores in London, Foyles, which has this sort of five levels of books. It's an awesome store. And I do buy gifts there, but I don't ever buy sort of paperback books in print anymore. So I will wander around and write down things and get them later online. So people do that. So if you have a bookstore that also integrates with your online store, that should be more effective, I would have thought. I mean, if these bookstores like Foyles, like Waterstones, like Borders, whatever, have integration with an online store, that surely has to mean that you will reap the benefits. So maybe these Amazon bookstores will help traditional publishers and traditional bookstores reinvent the way they do things. Let's hope so. You know, I'm ever a glass half full person. Indies were a bit of a flutter this week, as reported by David Cochran. Books with a table of contents at the back of the book were being pulled on KDP Select. Again, this is when people, you know, people will always, always try and scam. There'll always be this tiny percentage of people who will scam. And apparently David reported it. I mean, these things kind of make me laugh because they work for all of 10 minutes before Amazon or Google or whoever catch on. They're not a long-term sustainable model. So essentially this person or group of authors had put a sort of big button at the front of the book, which is like, click here, and you'll get something really special. And then the link will go to the back of the book. And so they get their pages read, you know, thing with Amazon. So it's like another scam. And the thing is, again, I would say, don't worry about this type of thing. If you've had the pull down notice, you know, you can appeal to Amazon and say, this is not a scam. I do think that people just overreact to a lot of these things. Amazon, as Google, as all these different places, are trying to stop scammers. They're not trying to stop people who are creating quality products that readers will love. So, and of course, if you're not in KDP Select, this is not a problem, as I'm not. Another kind of thing, Digital Book World was on this week, publishing industry conference. I scanned the news from it. Probably the only interesting thing, new thing, was Data Guy presenting the author earnings data. But again, that was nothing new to indies. And I don't think it will make any significant news outlet in traditional publishing because they have no real agenda for pushing indie success. So, but it was interesting that they invited him to speak there. Okay, personal update. Destroyer of Worlds is back from my editor and I'll start on that edit tomorrow and it will go to my proofread at the end of the week. I have it on pre-order and it will be out 21st of April. I did have it originally end of March and then I moved it because I'll be in Austin for the Smarter Artist Summit and I don't want too much happening at the same time, although we all know the launch is not the point. So next week, I keep promising this, but I'm going back to the Author Mindset book, which is next on my list. It's one of these quite difficult books because there's so much I want to put in it and it's already at 40,000 words and so it's probably going to be a magnum opus like Business for Authors, How to Be an Author Entrepreneur. You know, it's going to be a big book, so hey, that's fine. Everyone loves a big book. I was also a kind of big personal milestone for me. I was on the Unemployable podcast last week, which is a great show. It is for people who can get a job, they just choose not to. And I'm certainly these days unemployable by that definition. I was interviewed by Brian Clark from Copyblogger, or what used to be Copyblogger and is now Rainmaker Digital. One of these businesses that started 10 years ago as one man and a blog and is now a multi-seven-figure business, which is brilliant. One of those stories I always love. And Brian is one of my kind of mentors. And when I say mentor, I mean, many people email me every week going, will you mentor me? And I don't do that kind of official mentoring. But someone like Brian, I consider that he has been a mentor for 8 years, you know, since 2008, when I first started getting into all these things, he's been a mentor. But I've never spoken to him before. I never emailed him. I've listened to his podcast. I've read his blog posts. I've done his courses. I've paid for his audio programs. I've basically done everything to learn from him and his team for the last 8 years, therefore consider him a mentor, but I've never emailed and said, will you be my mentor? So yeah, I don't know why people don't just learn from people online through books and podcasts and things. Also, I'm kind of excited to be on that show as Tim Ferriss and Seth Godin, another couple of my sort of online mentors, have been on that show. So it is a great show. If you want to learn more about being an entrepreneur, you'll find that at unemployable.com, I think it is, or you can also go to just search Unemployable on iTunes or Stitcher or the usual places. So here's what you've sent me in the last few weeks. Neffy says, listening to the podcast while talking mains on a C175 out of a 793F mining truck. Sent me a picture of an engine. And I love that because I don't have a clue what that means, but that sounds like you're doing something sort of mechanical and technical, and I love it. Brilliant. Thanks, Neffy. Suzanne Grosser says, the intro of this episode, I presume the last one, was really inspiring. I'm in the early stages of my writing career and it helps to hear that patience and persistence really work. Yes, they do. And I hope those of you who consider me an online mentor can see from my own journey that patience and persistence are the things that will eventually make you a good career, good income with your writing. Whereas trying to scam things like putting the table of contents at the back so that you get your KDP Select reads
It's just not the way forward. But as I said, people will always do that kind of thing. Geetanjali Mukherjee said, addicted to listening to the podcast at the gym. Makes me anticipate the treadmill torture far more. I swear I'm responsible for everybody's personal fitness these days. Eva Holmquist says, listening while walking between my workplaces. Meg Cowley, who was on the show talking about colouring books, says, working on ebook print your own editions of my colouring books while listening. And I'm really interested in that. I think Meg is at the forefront of doing cool, interesting print products. So I will try and find out more about that. And of course, thanks to everyone who has reviewed and also tweeted pictures of colouring from my dad's An English Country House and Garden colouring book. It's going quite well, and we shall see how that continues to go. Steve Troer says, catching up with the show, utterly failing to repair the TV that died during my retro gaming party. Which sounds hilarious. I mean, just the fact that we're in a retro gaming point at this point, you know, it's like a retro game will be the things that my brother used to play in the 90s, I guess. Amy Draper listened this week during my commute and, as ever, got re-engaged in my writing. Edwin Downward, listening to the show driving home from the dentist. Another dentist show. Brittany Fichter, listening while we play in the laundry bin. Cute baby picture. And Brittany, I think you've been sharing what you've been doing since you were pregnant. So I'm hoping that we'll be having Brittany's baby grows up with the show over the following years. Catherine Bradshaw, thanks for brightening my mornings with the podcast. They're my absolute favourite. Time to devour the back catalogue. And yes, now since we're on episode 260, there's quite a large back catalogue. Oh, yes, I just wanted to mention this tweet finally. Jolene Scott says, I've just started the Arcane series, book one done, loving it, loving Morgan, she's fantastic. And I wanted to mention that tweet because I get so many emails about people obsessed with launching. Now, that book, that first Arcane book, originally published as Pentecost back in 2011, now Stone of Fire, it's 5 years later, and people are still finding that first book. So for indies, it's not about the launch spike. It's about this long tail over a long period of time. So, and actually, if you think about it, are people, you know, in this binge culture we're now living in, are people more likely to engage with a series that has 7 books and number 8 coming out next month? Are they more likely to pick up that longer series because they can see there's longevity in it, rather than the first book in a new series where there's only book one? So I think, you know, given the House of Cards dropped last weekend, we're still binging on The Good Wife, which is a fantastic series. You know, but a lot of people, you know, on Twitter kind of watched the whole show over the weekend because Netflix dropped all the episodes at once. So I think, you know, things are changing in terms of how people consume media. So it's something really to think about when you are planning, well, how many of us plan our books? But if you do plan your books, then thinking about, okay, so I don't need to stress too much about book one, the sales on book one at the beginning. When I've got, you know, 3 books, 5 books, more books, you know, that's when I will see the significant income coming in. So hope that makes you feel a bit better if you're on book one and wondering when you're going to sell any. We all feel that way. So please do email me or tweet me with what you're doing while listening to the show and any pictures of where you are. And I love the interaction and really appreciate you getting in touch. That's always fun. So yes, pictures of where you are while listening to the show, particularly exotic places around the world. And of course, what is normal to you is exotic to other people. So I'll look forward to those. You can tweet me at The Creative Pen or email joanna@thecreativepen.com. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A. So 99 Designs, you can get all kinds of designs for your author business. You can obviously get book covers, as you will have heard before, but you can also get merchandising, branding, business cards, illustrations, artwork, and much more. And I've used 99 Designs because I have a book cover designer now. I've used it for illustrations. So for the map that goes in the front of Risen Gods, a custom map of Aotearoa, New Zealand, which includes all the cool things that kind of happen along the way. And of course, all dark fantasy books need a map. So really love that. Also, I did an illustration for Gates of Hell. It's the key to the Gates of Hell. I actually commissioned that image and it's used on the cover and inside the print book. So I actually think that having illustrations like that can really enhance the print product in particular. So how do you use 99 Designs? You essentially go there, you go to 99designs.com/Joanna and you put in your design brief. So let's say it is a book cover, you add what goes on the front, the title, subtitle, author name, and if it's a print version, what goes on the back and the spine. Then think about the genre, the feelings, the emotions, the cover ideas that you might have, and very importantly, examples from your genre. So take some screen prints of the top selling books in your category and include those as examples, color palettes, that kind of thing. And if you're using a series, then also include information about your series. Once you have lots of submissions, you can give feedback and leave comments on the designs, and you can then do a poll to your social media or your email list, which can be really helpful or not helpful at all. Then you ultimately pick your winner, you get the files, and you're done. And, you know, as I said, I'm really happy with my book cover designer, but I have used 99 Designs for those custom illustrations. And you can also get business cards done, you can get artwork, you can get other branding stuff, website stuff, you know, whatever you want, basically. And there's 100% money back guarantee, so you don't have to pay if you don't get a design you like. And remember, your book cover design is the best marketing asset you have. Well worth investing in. Makes your book stand out in 2016. And of course, remember also, you can always redo your cover. So I've actually just had Desecration redone. This is cover number 3 for Desecration. The main reason being that now the trilogy is done. The danger when you do a cover for the first book in a series is you don't really understand what the series is until you've got the other books in the series. So we've just redone Desecration and I really love the new cover. Of course, I've loved the other covers, but I really love this one, and it makes the trilogy much more coherent. So never be afraid to redo covers if you think it might give your work a new lease of life. So remember, you can get a power pack upgrade worth $99 at 99designs.com/Joanna, Joanna. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to everyone supporting on Patreon, and a big thanks especially to new patron Anita McCormick. And I will be recording the Patreon only Q&A in the next week. So if you are a Patreon supporter, please go to the special link that you have and ask your questions. And I will be putting that up in the next week or so. And that will make an extra, I think we're up to 3 hours of extra audio now if you're a Patreon supporter. So if you want to support me on Patreon, you can even just do $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So less than a coffee a month and you'll get that extra Q&A. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen, and today I'm here with Beth Beelow. Hi Beth.
Hi Joanna, it's nice to be here with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Beth is an author, professional coach, speaker, and podcaster. And today we're talking about her best-selling book, The Introvert Entrepreneur, Amplify Your Strengths and Create Success on Your Own Terms, which is fantastic. So Beth, just start by telling us a little bit more about you and your business.
Well, it's so funny that we start out with asking about me, because that's one of the toughest questions for an introvert to answer. It's like, we want to go, no, tell me about you. I want to hear about you. But as you said, yes, I'm a coach and podcaster and author and speaker. And I live here in the beautiful Pacific Northwest in the United States, in Tacoma, Washington, not far from Seattle. And I have a husband, a cat, and a dog who might make an appearance during this interview. We'll see. And yeah, I've been coaching now for about almost 8 years. So it feels like yesterday when I just started my training. So it's exciting to kind of be able to say, yeah, I've got a few years under my belt, and excited to have been able to use the coaching platform and what I've learned and the topic that I talk about to be able to kind of parlay that into a book to help, you know, spread the message even further. And, you know, I believe, you know, passionately in the power of introverts and in the power of entrepreneurship. And when those two things can intersect in a really healthy way, we can change the world. You know, we already have, but I think we can continue to do so in even more powerful ways. So that's a little bit about me and my business. You know, I coach one-on-one clients and do the speaking engagements, and I love doing my podcast, as I'm sure you love doing yours. It's a very introvert-friendly medium. So, that's a little about me.
Fantastic. And I guess, I mean, I first became aware of you a while ago now, and, you know, eventually emailed you, and I've seen your book in my bookstore here in Bath in England. Yeah. So yeah, it really is getting around. And so yeah. I wanted to first ask for people listening who might still not get the difference, you know, the personality type. So what is your definition of an introvert? And also, why has it suddenly become so acceptable to talk about?
I know, we're kind of in a golden age of the introvert.
Totally.
Yeah. So introversion and extroversion are two terms that have been around since the 1920s. And they were penned by Carl Jung, who is a Swiss psychologist with whom your listeners are probably familiar. And I like to go back to the core definition of what introversion and extroversion is, which is about energy and orientation to the world. So an introvert gains energy through solitude and drains energy during social interaction. It doesn't mean that we can't do the social interaction or that we don't enjoy it, but in order to get up the energy to do it, we need ample alone time, quiet time, low stimulation time. And an extrovert, while we're all on a spectrum, will tend to kind of lean the other way. They will get energized through social interaction and higher stimulation environments, and they will get drained if they spend too much time alone or they don't have enough stimulation coming their way. So like I said, we're all on that spectrum. So nobody is, I hope, 100% one or the other. We're all a mixture. And I like to think of it as core and cultivated. So I'm a core introvert. That's who I am. That's what I'm hardwired to be. And it's how I perform best. But I have cultivated some my internal extrovert energy, whatever degree to which I have it, in order to do things like this, you know, to promote a book, to promote a business, to coach clients, to network. So we have that spectrum. And I think part of the key is understanding where your core is. Do you gain energy through socializing or solitude? And then how do you balance that out and integrate all of the energy you have within you in order to accomplish what you need to?
And then, you know, why is now such a golden time for introverts?
Yeah. You know, it seems like all of a sudden the conversation has burst onto the scene, right? And I think part of that's, of course, the popularity of Susan Cain's book, Quiet. Mm. And she has a TED Talk that's, you know, just been one of the most watched TED Talks of all time. But really, it goes back further than that. And you know, like I said, the conversation started back in the 20s, but I think it was around, I think The Introvert Advantage was published around 2002 or three. I should know that. But as far as I can tell, that was the first book that was purely devoted to talking about introverts and what are the strengths of an introvert. And so that was one thing that started the, you know, planted the seeds of the conversation. And then there were several other books that came out, and there was a fantastic article by a gentleman named Jonathan Rauch that he wrote in The Atlantic called, I believe it was called How to Care for the Introvert. And it was meant to be just this tiny little column in the back that didn't really, you know, have a lot of presence. And it's turned out to be like continues to be one of the most shared articles that The Atlantic has, even 13 years later. So it has been going on for a while, but I think that quiet served as that catalyst, and people are starting to understand how we have that extrovert bias, you know, that extrovert expectation, and that if we really want to have a progressive economy and society, we really need to be able to understand all of the different traits that people bring to the table.
Mm. And it's funny because I really used to think that there was something wrong with me, you know, as a kid. You know, it was always like, why don't you do team sports? And,
right,
you know,
right.
And I hate team sports.
I was always picked last and, you know.
Yeah, I'd rather be reading a book, you know. And,
exactly.
But it's funny because I got into professional speaking, and then I said to a friend of mine, oh, I get so tired at these events. Do you get tired? And she just looked at me and went, you're an introvert. I'm an extrovert. And I was like, no way. So,
yeah.
And that really helped me and got me into it. And then, of course, Susan Cain came along. But what are some of the tools that people can use to, you know, obviously we're not putting people in boxes, but there are some tools, aren't there, that help people kind of figure out what do you recommend people look at if they want to find out more about themselves?
I think, thank you for asking that, because and mentioning that we're not putting people in boxes, because some people will resist the label of, you know, I'm an introvert or extrovert or whatever it is. And I always like to look at it as it's, and I think this helps with the journey of self-awareness and exploration, to understand that it's just information. It's not meant to define you. It's information that as you're learning, as you read, take what works and leave what doesn't. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, if you look at something, you say, oh, that's not me. As the coach in me challenges you just a little bit to say, you know, think about that a little bit. You know, is there a grain of truth in that for you? Because often it's those things that we deny that can tell us the most about ourselves. So one of the books, I'll start with a book actually, it was, Please Understand Me. This little block there. Please Understand Me. When I first learned about introversion and extroversion, that was the book that I went to. And just reading about the different types and, you know, of course, going it goes beyond introvert and extrovert into the entire Myers-Briggs. And in this book, it's actually Kiersey Bates, which is an adaptation of the Myers-Briggs. I learned so much. When you're learning, that's the second thing that I think is important, to take what works, leave what doesn't, and accept yourself. You know, you said, there's nothing wrong with me. And so often society is telling us, you know, oh, you're too quiet and you're shy and you need to get out of your shell. And, you know, what do you do for fun? I don't get it, you know, or the worst, you know, like, are you mad at me? Because people don't understand, you know, that being an introvert, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you. To be able to show up as who you really are without apologies. And without being defensive, and you start to form a language around it. And that helps to educate other people that, no, I'm not mad. No, I'm not boring. No, I'm, you know, whatever it is that whatever label they're putting on me. So I think the best tool is that, you know, to learn about it, to listen to things like this, to read books, and then to really do your own self-exploration, whether that's journaling or, you know, whatever it is that helps you to clarify things for yourself and go into, you know, that place of saying, you know, I accept this about myself. This is who I am, and I'm not going to defend or apologize for it. And the more you're able to show up in that power, the more, you know, powerful you will be, and people will respond to that.
It is tough though. And, you know, I, in facing up to some of my issues, you know, I definitely, as an introvert in a social situation, use alcohol.
Yes, I know.
As a way.
Introvert, add alcohol, extrovert, right?
Exactly. And in fact, I went to an author's event, you know, fiction authors, run by a company, and they had tried to have a meeting with a group of authors without alcohol, and they wondered why the room was so silent. So sometimes you have to do this. But you know, on the serious side, authors do have to do events. You know this, yes. As an author, we have to go along to conventions. We have to meet each other, but also meet fans and, you know, go through this. So How can authors deal with this stuff? What are some of your tips for dealing with those situations?
The first thing is to understand kind of your ratio of solitude to social to be able to take care of yourself. So in my case, I need maybe 3 parts solitude to 1 part social. And so whenever you've got those events coming up or an opportunity to be networking, be cognizant of that. You know, arrange your schedule in such a way and take care of yourself so that you have the ample recharge, you know, charging up and recharging time so that when you show up at the event, you have the energy to be there. So that's the, I think that's the first and one of the most fundamental things. The second is to be very intentional about what you want to achieve at that event. You know, we can become very, and when I say that, I don't mean like set a firm goal and try to achieve it. It's more saying, you know, I'm going to walk into this event. I'm going to be comfortable. I'm confident about my book or my writing. I just want to connect with maybe 1 or 2 other people. And that's enough. You know, I want to have good conversations with them. It doesn't have to be anything profound. It doesn't have to, you know, part of this is accepting small talk. It's small. Like, don't make small talk big. You know, that's where I think we get into trouble is that we try to put this expectation on it. And it's like, small talk is just small talk. So kind of go in with this idea that, you know, I just want to meet a few people, find out a little bit more about them. You know, if I can talk about my work, that's great. I want to hear about their work. Because if I'm a good listener, then they're going to share with me and hopefully turn the tables and ask me a question about my work and, you know, kind of release the pressure for something to happen. You know, just make it about, you know, chatting with people. Because the other thing that's important to remember when you go into one of these events is that everybody there wants to meet you and wants to talk and is curious. It's not like you're intruding on them or stalking them or anything like that. You know, everybody's there because they want to meet each other. And that seems like a very simple kind of duh thing, but I think we can forget, you know, that we're all there for the same reason. And as uncomfortable as you might be, there are other people who are just as uncomfortable. So something that might be useful is like to say, I'm going to find the most uncomfortable looking person I can. And because I am an introvert, because I'm maybe uncomfortable myself, I'm going to reach out to that person in a very warm, friendly, non-threatening way. And just say hi and kind of break the ice. Because chances are, as uncomfortable as you are, there's bound to be somebody who's less comfortable than you are.
Yeah, definitely. And that feeds into the shy side of things. Because, yes. You know, I'm not shy. I'm a not shy introvert. And of course, there are people who are shy extroverts, which must be super, super, super hard. Which is difficult. So if people are both shy and introverted, you know, that can make things really difficult. And one of the things I found is social media, like actually finding people beforehand who are going to events. Is that something that you would recommend?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially like LinkedIn is really good for that, because you can find people in a professional context, but to also look them up on Facebook or Twitter, see what they're writing about, whatever about. I find introverts tend to have a lot of privacy settings. Not always, but I'm going and I'm like, I can't learn anything about this person because I can't see anything. And I respect that. So, you know, there's, but for a lot of people, especially entrepreneurs and people who want to be found, they will have, you know, information up there that you can tap into. And so it might be as simple as, you know, you used to live in the same place, or you have a couple of people in common, or the person wrote a blog post that really intrigued you or posted a podcast. And that makes it a lot easier to be able to approach them and say, hey, I saw in your LinkedIn profile that you used to work at X. Did you know so-and-so? And it doesn't matter. It might've been a company with thousands of people and the chances that they knew each other were very slim, but at least it's an opening, you know, it's that point of entry just to, and it shows that you did your homework and that you were curious and interested in that person. I want to throw in one more quick tip that I think is useful. And I don't know if this is helpful to someone who is shy or not, because like you, I don't consider myself a shy introvert, although I have situational shyness, like I think a lot of us do. But that's to think of the words introvert and extrovert as a verb. So when you go to the event, you are extroverting. You don't have to fake it. You can pull on that natural extrovert energy that you already have and just say, I'm going to project my energy outward for this period of time in service of my work, in service of my writing and my book and my colleagues, because, you know, like I said, everybody's there because they want to meet somebody. And one of the things that I love about going to one of those events is if I have a conversation with someone and I'm able to say, oh, you know, you should really meet so-and-so, or I just read this article that you might find interesting. Can I send it to you?
Mm. Yeah, that's great.
Anytime you can pass on resources. So even if I just focus on that, I feel like I've shown up, I've been contributing, and I've accomplished something.
That's great. And I like the I am extroverting in this on this occasion, because it does feel that way. And I was very surprised again when I got into public speaking that so many public speakers are introverts.
Yes.
Because it's almost we're more comfortable on a stage separated. Yes. There's actually a barrier, really.
Exactly.
And when people approach you, they approach you because they've seen you speak, and it kind of just it stops it. And also actors, I learned a lot of actors. So it's very much that they are we have to. And there's nothing wrong with pretending sometimes, is there? Like we have to kind of put on that armor or that mask for that occasion. That's allowed.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the key is finding out what is that mask that is authentic to you.
Yeah.
Like it's a mask that already exists within you, because I think we can fall into the trap of saying, I need to be like so-and-so over here. I need to be big like Tammy or John or Sue. It's about like what's big according to you. I mean, just to not to bring politics into it, but I just thought this was really interesting because the presidential candidates here in the United States, you know, there's a number of them that lean introverted, including Hillary Clinton, who right now is the lead, you know, in the lead for the Democratic nomination. And I saw an article where she actually described herself as an extro introvert. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was an interesting combination of the words. She's like, I very much love people and I like getting out there and talking to them. And I definitely, you know, am an introspective, need my alone time type of person. Mm. So I thought that was I think that was the first time I'd seen that way of phrasing it. And I thought that was a pretty effective way of explaining it.
Mm. And I wondered in your, because you obviously work with a lot of business people and introverts and extroverts, do you see any gender difference in this space?
That's a great question that, you know, what I've heard, at least anecdotally or read, and I can't cite a source, is that there tend to be more introverted men than women. But when it comes to entrepreneurship, so far, at least if I just look at my clients, it's pretty even of the introverts that are drawn to entrepreneurship. So I don't know. I think there's probably gender differences in like what the concerns are about, you know, or what the challenges are. But in terms of, you know, who's drawn to being an entrepreneur, I think it's, at least in my experience so far, it's been fairly even.
Mm. And then another question is, I'm very lucky. Well, lucky, I have a lovely husband who is also introverted. And so he understands the way I do things, and we have lots of time, separately. But I know some people struggle because their partnerships may not, you know, they may not understand why the other one is like they are. And this helped me understand my brother, you know, brought up by my mum, who's an introvert, as a single mum, and me as an introverted sister. My poor brother spent his youth not being misunderstood, basically. So I wonder, what tips do you have for both introverts and extroverts listening on how to understand each other and work together and get on together?
Yeah. I think first is to recognize that there is the difference and that it's not personal, that it's something that is just part of your makeup, of your energy. I even like to go so far as to talk about introverts and extroverts, not as personality types, but as energetic types. That because when we talk about it as personality types, yes, it influences our personality, but that's not really the true definition. And I think when we do that, we're able to take a step back from personalizing whatever the behavior is. So we can talk to each other, and that's the next step, I think, is like raise your awareness and say, okay, I'm acknowledging, you know, I'm an introvert and that means this, and I'm an extrovert and it means that. And it means, so talking then about, so what does that mean in the relationship in terms of what the differences in your needs are? Because whereas the introvert can feel like the extrovert is like forcing them into social situations and trying to fix them and that, you know, accusing them of being depressed or whatever it might be. And the extrovert might feel like the introvert is neglecting them, you know, doesn't like spending time with them, is shutting down. So having a conversation and saying, you know, and when you've done your research, you know, you start to have some language around this of saying, you know, sometimes in order for me, like as an introvert, in order for me to really be present with you, to enjoy your company, to be my best, I really need to have some of that downtime and alone time. So if I ask if, you know, if I say after dinner, I'm going to take a walk by myself, it's not because I need to get away from you or, you know, anything. It's not about getting away from you. It's about getting connected to me so that when I come back, I can be present. And then the extrovert can say, well, you know, sometimes, and then the extrovert might say, well, I really need to be able to go out on Friday night. And I know you're just beat and you want to stay home. And so for the introvert to be able to say, that's fine, go ahead. And for the extrovert to feel okay about that, you know, to reconcile with themselves, I'm not abandoning this person. I'm not, you know, being selfish. And I mean, both people to understand you're not being selfish. The key is to, you know, to be able to talk about it and to be open about it. And, you know, like you, I'm married to an introvert as well and just feel really, yes, lucky about that. You know, it's, so it's really about having that, that having the conversations and being transparent with one another. You know, don't make the other person read your mind about what's going on. And I say that especially to the introvert, because we can think that, well, if I want to take a walk by myself, well, of course they know that, you know, it's nothing personal. But we don't know what the story is that's going on in someone else's head. So to be able to say that, and even in our introverted household, you know, it's like we love being alone together. And then we appreciate the times when we can go our separate ways. Because then when we come back together, we enjoy each other's company more. So to see that there's a, there can be a richness there, it's mainly about having some really open communication.
And I would add, since the audience are writers, that for me, letter writing to people when, because I don't like conflict. I don't think that is an introvert trait. I think that's...
that's a universal.
I mean, but so I would rather write a letter or, you know, even to my husband or, you know, and as you said, journaling can be really good in that way. But I wanted, you know, just to switch to the business side. Your book is great because... I think the introvert entrepreneur is something that I really care about as well. And the, an author and a creative can also be a business person. So what are some of the strengths of an introvert in the business and entrepreneurial sense?
We often have a really strong independent streak and creative drive. I think that's one of the reasons we become entrepreneurs in the first place, because we've been in, you know, perhaps we've been in a traditional work setting and found that we're either not appreciated, we're not given room to grow the way we need to, we're always forced into team interactions and, and things like that. meeting after meeting, you know, and it really wears us out and we feel like we're not able to do our best. And so that's one of the reasons why we strike out on our own, because we say, you know, the only way I can be me and express myself is to create this entity on my own. So I think that independent streak gets us out of the gate and gets us going and motivates us. And then while we're in it, the independence, you know, it can be a lonely endeavor. I mean, you know, it probably most of the people I talk to and probably you as well, you know, we're more solopreneurs. We don't have employees and brick and mortar and, you know, lots of people around us. And so it can be rather isolating. And for the extrovert, that would be really hard. They would be like, okay, how can I form a team? Whereas the introvert can kind of withstand that and actually thrive in it a little bit longer. And I think that that's a strength, because then we'll, you know, we'll kind of persevere and we're not going to feel that, that isolation as much. And so we're able to kind of just hunker down and do the work. I also think that, I go back to, a book by Dan Pink, called Drive, where he talks about,
and the one before that, the one he, A Whole New Mind.
A Whole New Mind. Yes. Brilliant. Yes. And well, you know, in Drive, he talks about the surprising things that motivate us. And it's autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And when I think of the introvert entrepreneur, those are three strengths and desires that I believe they have that propel them into success. So the autonomy I already talked about, you know, you're kind of in charge of your own ship. You are the captain, and it's up to you, sink or swim. Purpose. You're very driven by, a specific objective and a call to create something in the world and to make it, out there and making a difference in people's lives. And then mastery, I think, is another thing that is a strength of introverts, is that we have a desire to go deep on something rather than broad. Mm. So I would much rather be an expert and almost form an identity around something like introvert entrepreneurship, form an identity that also represents me, and to have, confidence in that topic rather than kind of be a jack or Jill of all trades, where I know I dabble and I know a little about a lot of things. So we tend to like to go deep rather than broad. Mm. And when it comes to, making connections, I mean, really entrepreneurship is about relationships. In the end, it's about making connections with other people. And I think introverts have we have something of an advantage in that department because we are really good at connecting one-on-one, and we tend to be really good listeners. And when you look at studies that look at what are the traits of successful salespeople and networkers, it's about listening. It's not about talking. Mm. And if an introvert can lean into that, even further refine their listening skills and trust them, then they're going to make really solid connections that will help their business.
Mm. Yeah, so I'm glad you mentioned autonomy there, because my audience are also indie authors, independent authors. Yes. And I do wonder if indie authors skew introvert. I mean, that's a really interesting thing, because we do so much on our own, and actually all our assistants, I have like 11 contractors, but they're all, none of them are with me. Virtual.
Yes,
which is exactly. Great. And as you say, we can do that. We can work alone. That's quite interesting. But just on the other side, what are some of the typical struggles? Obviously, we mentioned networking as a struggle. Yeah. What are the other struggles that an introvert might find in a business sense?
There is, there's a requirement, like the networking, to take that further. What the umbrella is about visibility. Mm. In order to be successful, I would be hard pressed to think of an entrepreneurial endeavor where you would not need to be seen and heard and connecting with people. So that requires a lot of energy. I mean, it requires a lot of strategy and thinking and planning and all of that and setting things into place, but then the actual implementation. Mm. What's great about that, and that somewhat what counters the challenge, is social media, and opportunities like this. And social media can still be really draining. Like, depending on what kind of headspace you're in, I can log on to Facebook and it's like I'm walking into a happy hour party with 100 people all chattering away. And then when I shut it down, it's like, whew, okay, it's quiet again. Mm. So tools like that have really greatly expanded our ability to get past that challenge of the visibility, and making ourselves heard without shouting from the rooftops. And I think it's a tool that we need to also be very intentional and strategic with, so that it doesn't start eating up our energy in a way that's not healthy. So I think visibility, and then along with that visibility comes vulnerability. Especially for writers. I mean, you've probably experienced this. I've experienced it. Putting yourself out there. In the introvert's case, we have so much that's going on inside that it can seem like everybody knows about it because it's so real. Like, have you ever had a conversation with your husband where maybe you're sitting in the car and you say, did I just think that, or did I say something right then? And he'd be like, you just thought it. Okay, here's what I was thinking, So it can be very rich. And so when it's time to bring that out, it's very vulnerable. Mm. Because we're putting it out there for everybody to see. And I imagine that's true for the extrovert as well. But I think introverts probably go through the process as long as they can in solitude before they have to share it. And then when they share it, it's like, it's out there open for criticism. So that's one thing I appreciated. I've self-published and I've traditionally published. And with the traditional publishing, what I found was helpful. And I encourage, and I think this is totally replicable with an indie, indie writer. As I went along, I invited more and more people came on to the process. So while I was still working on the first draft, I went ahead and hired an editor, a developmental editor, and I would feed her chapters and she would give me feedback. And so by the time we got to the end, what I had was a draft with fewer red marks as we went along. I became better at my writing. Mm. I started to think, what feedback would Lori give me about this part? And I wasn't alone in doing it. And it sort of broke the vulnerability bubble. It wasn't just inside of me, but now somebody else was seeing it, somebody who was not judging it, but was rather there to support me and help me and make it better. So that, by doing that, then it wasn't quite as scary to start sharing a sample chapter with an agent. And then it wasn't quite so scary to share, with potential publishers. And then, so it's like each step, more people came on board. And I think you can do the same thing with guest readers and having an editor and, doing other things in your process as an indie writer, so that when it finally gets out there into the world, you already have gotten feedback that has been supportive. You feel confident in it and it's not quite so scary. Mm. So I can't remember what your original question was because I kind of went off there, but I hope that was useful.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. It was about the challenge, the challenges. But,
yeah, the challenges, yes.
Yeah, but for every author, I find that an editor, it's the one thing, a professional editor, a professional cover designer, these are the two non-negotiables when it comes to publishing in any way. But just kind of going further into your experience as an author, getting a, this isn't really related to the introverts, but getting a book deal, how much do you think that was related to the platform you've built up and your podcast and, what was the sort of impetus for that?
I think all of the above, right? So I think there were a couple of things that were in place. One was I'd entered into the introvert entrepreneur space back in 2010 before it was really kind of this everywhere topic. Mm. So I kind of had, something of a head start in building my platform. Mm. Started the podcast. I have to say, I don't think I would have gotten a book deal had it not been for the podcast. Mm. Because it's not just about the podcast itself. It's about the connections I made through that podcast and the content that I was able to, generate and gather and to demonstrate that I could consistently put myself out there in that way and connect with people who were influencers, who had written best-selling books, that sort of thing. So I think it's a combination of, having got into the introvert space just a sliver ahead of the curve, and then the fortune of course, the conversation breaking open. Like if Quiet hadn't happened, I don't know. So, I think there's value in being able to say that the success of one person, what is it, a rising tide lifts all ships, whatever that saying is. So that's one. I think the other was, as a coach, that was my business. It still is, but I came up with a very clear niche. I found a gap in the marketplace, a gap in the conversation, and was able to move into it and engage with people in a very conversational way, especially on social media, and to, just be consistent with it. So I think that was important. And then it is about, showing up in all these different places and making connections. For me, the podcast was about having the conversation and creating content, but I had, and I have, a genuine interest in promoting other people's businesses. And getting their messages out there and what their learning is. And that includes my introvert colleagues, the other people who are working in this space. The level of collaboration was also something that was really important to getting that deal. So yeah, it was a combination of things for sure.
Yeah. And as you say, 2010, you are an expert. You've been doing this for a number of years. This is not like the first book you've written that's kind of just gone boom and you've just appeared from nowhere. So I think that's really important for people to remember, is that for anybody, it takes time, doesn't it, to develop yourself as an expert in a niche. And then I wanted to ask you about, obviously you've mentioned the podcast, but book marketing in general as an introvert, because lots of people still have these horrible fears about marketing. So how can people, what are your suggestions for book marketing as an introvert?
Start marketing the book before you've written the book, right? Like, you know, you're practically doing it from day one, at least in terms of always having in mind that the way a book, especially if you're an introvert, is going to catch on is, and I keep going back to this, is to have champions, is to have that network of people that I might only know five of them, but those five people each know 20 or 30 or 50. And if I form a relationship with those champions and it's mutual, you know, I'm championing their work, they're championing mine, then when it comes time to do the book, you've got sort of a little launch team there that can help you spread the word. So it's not just you going, hey, 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 look at me, I've got a book. You've got all these other people saying, wow, I'm really excited. Beth just put out this book. You need to check it out. So that's part of it, is really forming relationships and enlisting your champions and forming those mutually beneficial relationships. You know, I decided, and, you know, I think for a while, and maybe it's still there, you know, an author, instead of doing a book tour where you're going around to bookstores and things like that, they would do a blog tour, right? Where you would guest blog on other people's posts and be interviewed. I decided to do a podcast tour. So instead of doing the blogs, I would, you know, pitch myself to appear on somebody's podcast so that I would be able to chat about it and share some content and value. That was much more energy efficient for me. It was much more comfortable, even than the blogging, because in the blogging, it's like, I have to come up with writing something fresh every time. I feel like a conversation, just by the nature of you being different from Dave, being different from Sue, it's going to be different, you know, no matter what. And I think it's just, it's a powerful platform to get the word out. And it's also about social media and being willing to show up consistently and share content. And I hate to use this expression, but it's the one that's coming up. Don't be shy. You know, be bold about it. And there are ways that you can do it without being braggy. I think that's the other thing that we often will have a fear. Like we are saying, look at me, look at me. It can just be, you know, I'm really excited that this is out now. You know, just sharing celebration, asking people to share and celebrate with you is also a way of putting it out there without shoving it down people's throats.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I'm the same now. Like I won't do, or very rarely will do a guest blog post because I much prefer to do podcasting. Because as you say, even though, because it's very difficult to write a whole load of blog posts on, and you've just written a book, you know, and you kind
of. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm tired.
Yeah,
it's like once I did it, you know, the publisher was getting different media hits and they were all requiring me to write a fresh article or post. And I was grateful for that. But at the same time, I was sort of like, oh, I'm out of words.
Yeah, I can't spin this another way for this other thing. Yeah.
Other thing to make it fit with their publication or their voice, you know. So so this to me is just a way to be able to show up authentically, and it feels like a much more energy efficient way to connect with people.
And actually it ends up being quicker, because even though we're on the phone for a certain amount of time, it's still quicker than writing a draft, editing it, because your words are, you know, people will forgive us with our conversational tone and mistakes, but they don't forgive it when it's written down, do they?
I mean, exactly.
Especially authors. Authors are terrible.
Merciless. And the internet, you know, I've seen that, like the internet where grammar goes to die. So it's... I think we are more forgiving with the conversational aspect.
We definitely are. But we are out of time. So just tell people, what can they find on your website, and where is your website, and where is your book for sale online?
Yeah. So the website is theintrovertentrepreneur.com. And there you'll find a link to the podcast and the blog and the book. Of course, the book is available in the UK. It was published by Virgin. So you should be able to, I'm so excited. That's one of the best parts. It's like saying, somebody saying, I saw it in the bookstore. And some people will even send pictures, which is very fun. So so hopefully you can find it in the bookstore. Otherwise, Amazon, the UK site, or if you're in the States, on the US site. And, you know, in terms of social media, you can find all the links on the website, but I tend to be most active on LinkedIn and Twitter with trying to pick up my LinkedIn presence. So I invite you to join me and let's have a conversation.
Great. Thanks so much for your time, Beth.
Thanks, Joanna. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.